Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
The True Crime Society podcast contains adult themes and violence and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. And if you'd like to skip the intro or move to any specific part of the podcast, please refer to the timestamps listed in the episode description. Thank you. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the True Crime Society podcast with Stephanie and Olivia. It is November 13th, 2024 right now. It is very cold in New York. It's funny because I was editing the episode that will come out tomorrow, yesterday. And in that episode, I was talking about how hot it was because it was like 80 degrees in New York. And now it's dropped down to, I think the low last night was 26. So below freezing, obviously. Very chilly.
The weather finally is where it's meant to be.
Yeah, I think so. I can't even remember because the weather's so out of control. It also hasn't rained here for months and there's huge brush fires all around, which is kind of scary. I know you can relate to that because you've been through that. Luckily, none too close to me, but it's really sad to see.
I feel like our weather's weird here too. I feel like in November it gets quite humid. Like I just looked it up, the humidity is like 85% or something. So it's quite cloudy. And like this is when it gets a little bit more tropical, I guess, like hot, rainy, wet, sticky. So it is quite cloudy. The weather forecast for a little while looks cloudy, but, you know, at least it's getting warmer.
Yeah, and I feel like the opposite here. Obviously, I was saying with the drought and everything. I feel like it's so dry between it being cold, the drought, and just like putting my heat and stuff on dries out your skin. I'm like, man, I need to drink gallons of water because I feel like crusty.
I can't
remember what I talk about on what podcast, like Patreon versus this, but I know I've talked in the past about how I've been trying to have these friggin' plants in my garden or outside, and obviously it's winter now. So I brought some into the garage and I bought UV lights for them to have them in the garage since it's getting colder. But I have this one plant, it's a tropical plant that I'm really trying to like, I really want it to thrive. And it's a white bird of paradise. And I was looking it up because I was like, it's getting pretty cold out. Like my garage is kind of heated, but when it's cold, it's still going to be cold out there. So I looked up the temperature of what it should be for the plant and it says that it shouldn't really get below 60 degrees. I was like, yeah, my garage is definitely not going to be 60 degrees when it's 20 degrees outside. So I was like, okay, let me go bring it in. And this was while I was trying to like also edit the podcast episode. My ADD kicked in and was like, what about this plant? So then I go get the plant, bring it inside. Immediately, Peep and Freshbutt are like, let's go check out this plant. Because they love to bite a plant. One thing they're going to do is bite a plant. So they immediately go over, they're sniffing it, trying to bite it. And I was like, let me Google this. So of course I look it up and it says it's mildly toxic to cats. Like it's not going to kill them, but it'll hurt their little tummies.
Yeah.
Which I don't want either because, you know, I have a shag rug in this living room that I just got that Freshbutt already has thrown up on twice. These cats, they just throw up in the worst places. I don't trust them. So I was like, all right, I got to bring it back outside. Brought it back outside, and then I'm still like, it's going to die, though. What am I going to do? It's grown so much since I first got it. I don't want to just let it die. I'm sure most people are like, don't you have a place where the cats can't get it? I really don't. So I was thinking, and I was like, all right, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to bring it back in and I'm going to just put it in my bathtub and close the curtain and the cats will never fucking know. And that's what I did.
They'll and never the cats investigate.
Had no idea. I was nervous because like maybe they're going to smell it. Like they're going to see me bring it in. And they did. But they're just so dumb. They have no idea. So it's in my bathtub right now, but I'm like, it still needs sun. So I don't really know what I'm going to do. I think I'm going to get a plant stand so then I can make it high enough where they won't be able to reach the leaves to bite them.
Yeah.
So that's my plan. Or if anybody has any tips on this tropical plant, I was like, should I get a heat lamp and keep it in the garage? But I don't know. It's like, what did I get myself into?
You're a good plant mom. I'm just like, whatever. You can fend for yourselves. And if you survival of the fittest with my plants.
That's how I am with most of them. Like some of them I do want to live, but most of the ones I got are hardy enough that they go dormant in the winter. But I really love the tropical plants with the big leaves.
Yeah.
And this one, it's been growing. And I want to make it to the summer again.
It sounds like you're doing all the right things.
We'll see.
It'll get there.
I'm doing my best. It's exhausting. What's going on with you? You said you had a fun weekend plan.
Yeah, so I just thought this was a fun little thing. So every year we go away with a group of my friends, one group of my friends, and basically we all take a turn to organize it. So when it's not your turn, you don't know anything really about where you're going. It's a surprise up until you get there, essentially. So we're going on Saturday and we've been told like what the weather is, what we need to pack, but that's it. So I don't even know anything else, which is so exciting to me because I am the organizer in the family. Like I usually plan the itineraries. I know where we're going, but I don't know anything. So like I know that the weather is not going to be not too hot, not too cold. We don't need any really fancy clothes. It was like leave the heels at home, but maybe bring some wedges.
What's like the furthest away you could go? Like, could it be like really far away?
It's more than 1 hour from where we live and less than 3 hours. So it's not interstate, and we're driving, so it's not flying anywhere.
Interstate, triggering word.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll talk about that in a minute. So it's not to another state. It's in our state, but so I know, like, I kind of know the general radius of where it could be. Like, it's a very big area, but and I feel like also we try and go a new place. So I don't know. I'm assuming it's probably somewhere we haven't been as a group because we've been doing it for a few years now. Anyway, I don't know. I'll keep you updated the next episode. But they said bring your swimmers, which are like a bathing suit and a towel, and don't forget your sunnies. Mm-hmm. So that sounds like there might be a pool or a beach. So that's exciting. But I will keep you guys posted. But yeah, what the interstate thing that we laugh about is, I just assumed interstate was a global term. Like here they say like, so where are you going to go? Like if I was traveling from New South Wales, where I live, to Queensland, which is another state, I would say I'm going interstate. So on our Tyler Weathersby episode where his mother traveled from another state to see him, in the show notes I wrote that his mother was visiting from interstate, and someone took a lot of offense to that. It really triggered them. And they were like, do you even proofread? How can she visit from the interstate? And I'm like, I didn't say that. I said she visited from interstate, like another state. And even there's like, I looked it up and I'm like, have I made this up? But I just feel like it's maybe more of a British English term and not so much a US English term.
I know it's not as commonly said here, but I feel like most people know the phrasing.
Yeah. And because I was like, did I make a typo and put the interstate? But when I read it, it said just interstate. I'm like, I didn't say the interstate. I said she's visiting from interstate, i.e. another state. Oh my gosh. I just didn't realize that was a new one for me, that I just assumed that was the other word. I always assume that everyone knows, and I feel like you guys don't use it as often as fortnight.
Yeah, I mean, people should know what it is.
Yeah, but like even I posted an article in one of the groups the other day, and they're like, and someone commented, for anyone who doesn't know what a fortnight is, it's like a 2 week period. And I'm like, oh, that's just one thing I always forget. Mate, that's just must be more of a British English terminology.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift knows what it is, so.
Yeah, I know what it is because I'm going to sound dumb because I don't remember off the top of my head. Maybe the Constitution. It's in the Constitution or something like that. And when I was in like fourth or fifth grade, we had to memorize the Constitution and the word fortnight is in it. Or it could be talking about like the Declaration of Independence, something. I don't know. And I remember since we were younger, none of us knew what that meant. And I remember specifically our teacher explaining it to us. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just like so well educated from elementary school.
It's funny because I feel like fortnight is a term we use a lot here. Like at work, we discuss like in the next fortnight. Like it's just something that is used a lot. So it's interesting how some words are picked up more by some countries and other countries don't tend to use them as often. But so if you did see the Tyler Weathersby notes and you were like, what? That's what I meant, interstate. I meant she was visiting from another state.
Yeah, like we would just say, like for fortnight, we'd just be like, oh, in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Or it'd be like, oh, she was traveling from out of state.
Yeah, out of state. Like, see, and like also, if you said out of state here, that would also be like everyone would know. But I just feel like the main terminology here is interstate. And like even on the news, like friends, example, if they're talking about like there's heaps of holiday flights delayed and stuff, they'll be like, their interstate travel is blah, blah, blah. So it's, very commonly used here, but I have now learned that that is not always the case.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Right. So yeah, there's just one other case update that we wanted to quickly mention before we get into the main episode. In May 2023, so nearly 18 months ago, we covered Madeleine Kingsbury's case. You may remember that she was missing. Basically, I think that she'd left to take her kids to school and just never came home. She was missing for around 68 days before her body ended up being found. So if you haven't listened to that episode, go and check it out. But her body was found, and there has been an update that her ex-partner and the father of her children, Adam Fravel, has been found guilty of her murder. Their trial has just happened. At one point before her death, Adam told Madeleine that if she didn't listen up, she would end up like Gabby Petito. So He was found guilty of first-degree murder after the jury deliberated for only 9 hours. His attorneys tried to argue that there was no evidence of abuse or signs of a struggle at home and said they were disappointed with the verdict. So sounds like there might be an appeal at one point. But he is due to be sentenced on December 17th. So obviously a good update for her family that they've got justice, but now those children have lost both their parents, which is a very sad situation.
That was a sad story.
But yeah, I just wanted to give you that update because I know when I listen to other podcasts, I do appreciate when they give an update on something that they've covered in the past. And we do try to do that when we can. So I just wanted to add that one in.
Yeah. Okay. Today we're going to talk about Aunt Diane. As me and Olivia and, well, I guess most people say that because isn't that what the HBO documentary is?
It's called, yeah, There's Something Wrong With Aunt Diane, yeah.
Yeah, so this is about in 2009, a woman named Diane Schuler killed herself, her daughter, her 3 nieces, and 3 occupants of another vehicle when she drove the wrong way on the Taconic State Parkway in New York. It's actually local to me, and I feel like Olivia and I have definitely talked about this before, yeah. Either in the other episodes where it just like came up somehow or reminded us of something. I would have sworn we did an episode about it, but I think it's just because Olivia and I like to randomly talk about it.
Yeah.
But it's a very fascinating one because, as you will see, there's a lot of
conjecture
discourse about what actually, maybe, yeah. I guess. Yeah. Like what actually happened.
Police Sergeant Temple.
My name is Brad Kitsinas. I'm actually trying to help a friend right now, and I need some information. Their children are on their way home from a camping trip with their aunt. They just called my friend's house in distress, saying that the aunt is driving erratically. The aunt isn't picking up the cell
the
phone right now.
The woman driving the car, they think, is having a medical emergency because she called and then she couldn't talk anymore, and she's got 5 kids in the car.
Okay.
The father and the brother are here at the station.
City Hall Police, 911 emergency.
Bad accident. Route 117. What is this? Pleasantville Road?
That's 9. Ma'am?
Hey, guys. Wait a second. I'm the phone.
Route 117 at the Conic? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Are there any injuries?
I really don't know. Hold on. Let me check it out. Hold on.
Okay, thank you.
Honestly, hold on. I really don't know. Yeah, there are. There's, like, little kids. The kid's not moving. There's a whole bunch of kids. Honestly, the car smashed.
Okay, I'll call.
It was a horrific scene on the Taconic Parkway near Route 117 this afternoon. This burned-out shell was all that remained of a minivan after the head-on crash, which left 8 people dead.
Diane Schuler, her daughter, and 3 nieces. 3 Westchester men in the SUV were killed.
Evidence leads us to believe that a vehicle was traveling the wrong way, southbound, in the northbound lanes of traffic.
Several people were ejected, most of them children. And we prioritized and we were able to save 1 young child's life.
More than 1 family was destroyed tonight after a horrible crash on the Taconic Parkway. The lone survivor, a 5-year-old boy, clinging to life here tonight at the Westchester Medical Center.
So this accident is actually said to be the worst accident in Westchester County, New York in 75 years.
So the other previous one was a bus crash in, is it Ossining?
Ossining.
Ossining. Okay, so it was in 1934 when there was a bus crash there and that claimed 20 lives. So 1934 to 2009, this is obviously the worst thing to happen aside from that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't think of any accidents have been as memorable since I've been alive anyways. Obviously, there's bad accidents, but this was just such a horrible nightmare.
I feel like, too, a lot of these kind of wrong-way accidents, and I am generalizing, but a lot of them happen late at night after people have been drinking and things like that, whereas this happened lunchtime, middle of the day, tons of witnesses.
Yeah.
Stuff like that has kind of also kept the interest because there's a lot of information and we know basically exactly what happened, whereas a lot of the time it's conjecture and guessing about the situation.
Yeah, and I think some of the mystery of it makes it more memorable,
yeah.
But regardless, it was a horrible, horrible accident. The only other one I could think of that was just as bad, but it's not in Westchester County, was, remember that crazy limousine
accident?
Yeah,
I knew you were going to say that.
Was
that
like
a bridal?
Bachelorette party?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they were in some shady limo that the brakes cut out and everyone died. So sad.
That crash killed 20. Driver, all 17 passengers and 2 pedestrians. A stretch limousine crash.
Yeah. All right, so I'll get into some background about Diane first. So Diane Hance was born in Floral Park, New York on November 13th, 1972. Diane was said to have loved playing soccer while growing up. When she was around 9 years old, reports indicate that her mother left the family and she abandoned Diane and her 4 brothers. She attended Suwanaka Central High School. Her friends described her as funny and said that she was the class clown. Diane's brothers would later reconcile with their mother, but Diane never did. She met her would-be husband, Daniel, at the wedding of one of her high school friends. Based on some later statements from Daniel, we believe that the couple met around 1996 and they got married in 2001. Diane would have been around 29 years old when they got married. She also worked in corporate accounting for Cablevision, and Daniel worked as a public safety officer for Nassau County Police Department. They purchased a home in West Babylon for $340,000 in 2003, and they had 2 children named Brian and Aaron. Diane seemed to try hard to be the perfect mother. This is an excerpt from a Medium article. It says, Diane's children were always neat and clean. She would iron their clothes every day, not a hair out of place, not a spittle of toothpaste around their starched collars. After making dinner, giving baths, and having individual story time with Brian and Aaron, Diane would stay up late making custom photo albums of her children, sometimes as gifts for family and friends. She was the first person to arrive and the first person to pick her children up at school, even though her job was located the next town over. Working as an accountant and billing executive at Cablevision, she earned a reported $100,000 a year salary and she would join the PTA, participating in endless school functions. So it seems like she was very type A, did a lot, managed a lot.
There's kind of a lot of discussion online too about how she was abandoned by her mother and therefore she was trying to be this mother that she never had, which might play into what happened, like under so much pressure, but we can discuss it as we go along.
Christine LaPani was Diane's closest friend in 2009. She appeared in the HBO documentary that we were just talking about. It's called There's Something Wrong with Aunt Diane. And she spoke a bit about the type of person that Diane was. She said, "We were kind of not very similar in a lot of ways. I'm a very easygoing person and let a lot of things pass. She had to be in charge of everything. There was nothing left to chance. You know, everything had to be planned, precise. She was a powerful woman. She was very much in charge of everything at work, at home, in the car, in the friendship." In the car?
Yeah. It's kind of
that in there.
I feel like there's a bit more context to that where she talks about later on the GPS and she says things basically like Diane would override the GPS and say, "No, I'm not going that way. I'm, you know," like that's what she was referring to in the car. But yeah, I know it is a weird comment to like a weird part of the comment.
She also said she certainly was not a perfect person. She loved you. She loved you. And if she didn't like you, she could be difficult. She was okay as long as she was in control of everything. So the incident happened on Sunday, July 26, 2009. The family had been camping for the weekend at Hunter Lake Campground in Parksville, New York. Diane's three nieces, Emma, Allison, and Katie, were also with them. Hunter Lake Campground is a quiet, peaceful, yet fun environment to camp with families and friends. Built on family values, our campground is perfect for anyone looking for a pristine atmosphere to enjoy all that nature has to offer. Brian was 5 at the time, and Aaron was 2, and the three nieces were aged 8, 7, and 5. So between 5 to 6 a.m. on Sunday, July 26th, Danny woke up and started to clean his boat to prepare for the trip home. At 7 a.m., Diane woke up and she began getting all the children ready to start heading home. And at 9 a.m., Emma called her father, Warren Hans. He would later say that she sounded happy and excited. There was nothing amiss. Warren was Diane's brother, and his wife's name is Jackie. So basically, it doesn't seem like at 9 a.m. Diane was acting crazy or if she was like on drugs or wasted. Like the kids sounded happy and like they were having a good time. And if anything was amiss, they didn't seem to notice at least. So 9:30 a.m., Danny drove away from the campground in a pickup truck. He had all the luggage and the family's dog with him. Then Diane pulled away right after him. And she was driving the Hanses family's red minivan. And with her were all of the children. The Schuler's truck was too small to fit all the kids, so they had to borrow the minivan. So it seems like Danny had all the belongings, since obviously there's not enough room for that many children in a pickup truck. And Diane had all of the children. So according to Google Maps, the drive between the campground and Diane's home should have been around 2 hours and 30 minutes, or 140 miles. At 9:56 a.m., Diane was captured on CCTV at McDonald's in Liberty, New York. The kids were also seen, and they all seemed fine. They seemed happy, and they were playing.
Investigators from the Liberty station were able to obtain a video from the McDonald's, which was time-stamped. It showed Diane Schuler enter McDonald's with the children. We additionally interviewed the McDonald's employee who served her. He said that he did remember her and did not remember her being intoxicated or smelling of alcohol. The children were playing in the playground. They seemed to be having a good time. Through this video, we saw no obvious signs of intoxication.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Witnesses said that Diane also appeared normal at that time. She purchased breakfast for her nieces and her daughter, some chicken for Brian, and bought herself an iced coffee. They left McDonald's around 10:33 a.m., and Diane purchased an orange juice for herself for the road. At 10:46 a.m., Diane stopped for gas at the Sunoco gas station, which is also in Liberty. She can be seen there on CCTV, and this footage has been looked at a lot as kind of like the last sighting of last her images. Publicly before this happened. So a lot of people have broken down this footage frame by frame, trying to interpret any move she made. So there's no audio on the footage, but it's been reported that she asked the clerk for gel cap pain relievers, and the store didn't have any in stock, so she didn't make any purchases there. She got on the road again around 11 a.m. The clerk said that Diane appeared normal at the time. There's been some discussion on the footage of the minivan pulling out from the gas station. Some people think that she may pulled out a little aggressive or hastily. At 11:37, so like a little less than an hour later, Emma called her father, Warren, on Diane's phone. She said they were running late because of traffic. By this point, they should have been almost home. Warren spoke quickly with Diane and said that there was nothing unusual about the call. So sometime between then and 12 p.m., witnesses reported seeing the red minivan driving erratically on Route 17 in Orange County, New York. At 11:45 a.m., an eyewitness said that someone matching Diane's description was hunched over as if they were vomiting. It was like on the side of the road, right?
Yeah. There was two separate sightings, I believe, where she was out of the car and it looked like some articles say she appeared unwell. Like it sounds like she was, you know, looks like she was vomiting.
We were traveling back on a thruway heading south. We were driving in the center lane and the vehicle came up rather quickly in the right lane and moved into the center lane, moved back into the right lane, and continued to make a series of movements, changing lanes rather aggressively. And we both looked and we saw a woman grasping onto the steering wheel, appearing to concentrate as she was driving. And the last movement it made from the right lane, and it kind of cut off a car in the middle lane, and the car or the truck actually swerved out of the way to avoid it. But each time it made the movement, it did it, the vehicle was kind of, it was very precise. It would move into the lane, it would move out of the lane, and it was done with some degree of precision. And there came a point in time where we actually could see children's heads kind of swaying back and forth as the vehicle moved.
Coming down the thruway, going to the rest area, I thought we passed her. She pulled out and got right behind us. And she was, I mean, so close to me, I couldn't see her headlights. And then the next thing you know, you started hearing the horn beeping.
It made me nervous. In fact, I braced myself for an accident because I thought she was so close behind us.
Well, the way she was driving, I thought she was, you know, just some sort of nut coming behind me. And then when she tried to pass me again on the shoulder, that's when I really thought it. And then she just pulled right back in behind me.
The honking happened as we were getting off the exit for the thruway into the rest area. We stayed straight, which went into the car lane, and she veered off into the truck area. And I did see her open the door, get out of the car, and possibly she was going to get sick to her stomach.
What made you think that?
She was kind of bent over a little. My husband and I then walked into the rest area, and she wasn't there when we came out again. It was 12:30 p.m.
You had a do-over. What would you do?
I would have confronted her. You know, and then we probably would have seen those kids in the car. And we probably would have seen that there was, you know, there was something wrong, you know.
The same witness would later say that then Diane ended up coming back and passed her vehicle aggressively and was darting in and out of traffic. So this is like 10 minutes after Emma called.
Yeah, well, even less. Like she called the dad at 11:37. This is 11:45. So, you know, 8 minutes essentially, apparently. Obviously, like I feel like the timings could probably be a little bit off, but it was all generally happening.
Yeah, especially like the eyewitnesses.
Yeah, it was all generally happening within minutes of this phone call, apparently.
Yeah. Diane would later also be seen at another rest area, and people said that she did appear unwell. At 12:08 p.m., Jackie called Diane and spoke with her for 2 minutes. She said the conversation was normal. So Jackie is the mom of some of the children, the nieces.
The three nieces, yeah.
Dan then drove the minivan through the Harriman Toll Plaza at 12:13. Between 12:15 and 12:45, Diane was said to be driving aggressively, honking her horn and tailgating other cars. At 12:55 p.m., a wrong number was dialed from Diane's phone. And then 3 minutes later at 12:58, Emma called her father again. She was panicked and said that Diane was incoherent and that they were lost. Emma stated, "There's something wrong with Aunt Diane." And her mother, Jackie, heard the other children crying in the background before the call dropped out. Ugh, it's so horrible.
No, I can't imagine having all your children in a car and then knowing this is going on and being absolutely powerless to get there and stop it and do anything. It would just be horrendous.
Warren then called Diane at 1:01, so a couple minutes later. He said they spoke for around 8 minutes. At this time, the van drove through the Tappan Zee Toll Plaza. Warren said Diane was disoriented and that she was slurring her words. She told him that her vision was foggy, and Emma got on the phone, and Diane pulled the minivan over at this point. Emma told her dad that she saw a sign that said Sleepy Hollow in Tarrytown. Diane got on the phone again, and Warren instructed her to wait there. This is what pissed me off. It's like, if she wasn't feeling good, she already pulled over at this point. The kids are talking to the dad. Like, all she had to do was not get back in the fucking car. Like, not start driving again. Just wait there.
I feel like that's like, why so many people believe this is intentional. Like, it's not like if she was having a medical thing, he'd be like, just wait there. I'll be there. They were pretty close to home. You know, there was no reason for her to get back in the car, but she still did.
Normal person would have just waited. But I also think, and this is stuff that we can discuss at the end, but just while I'm thinking of it, because then I'll probably end up forgetting. I think it also has to do with like her very type A and control personality, where she was like, no, 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 like he's not going to come here and get me. Like I can handle this. I can do this. Like I'm in control.
Yeah.
Like that's what everyone said, is that she always had to be in control. So at 1:10 p.m., four wrong numbers were called from Diane's phone. And this makes me sad because, you know, it's just like the kids panicking, trying to call people.
But then also,
or her,
this,
I guess.
I think it might have been her because he called at 1:01. They spoke for 8 minutes. So this is literally like basically 1 minute after that. So it sounds to me like maybe she was kind of fumbling with her phone and like there's
maybe
no
Emma
reports.
Takes it.
Yeah, I don't know. It could be. Yeah, maybe.
But I thought it because the one was at 12:55, there was a wrong number dialed in. At 12:58, Emma called her father.
Yeah.
So it seems like Diane ended up putting her phone on a concrete barrier. It was left on a concrete barrier where they were pulled over originally, and she drove away without it.
Some reports say she put it there neatly, like it wasn't like it was like thrown on the ground. It was like placed on this concrete barrier. Like it wasn't thrown or anything like
that. I'd imagine she was, they were probably like sitting on the concrete barrier, leaning on it, and she put it down next to her.
Yeah.
And then got back in the car and kind of forgot it was there. Then 1:15, 5 minutes later, Warren called Diane repeatedly and was obviously getting her voicemail because the phone was left behind. After 1:30 p.m., Diane turned right from Pleasantville Road and onto an exit ramp for the Taconic State Parkway, putting her driving the wrong direction down the parkway. She drove southbound against traffic for 1.7 miles, causing many vehicles to have to swerve out of her way. Just like for information about this road, I hate the Taconic State Parkway. Many people will tell you they hate the Taconic State Parkway. It is a road, it's only like two lanes. Well, each side has like two lanes for the most part. I mean, maybe where she was, it opened up in some places, but it's just like a very twisty, narrow road. There's parts of it where there's no shoulder at all, so you can't even pull over. Just very twisty, goes through a lot of woods, more like hilly areas. And it's just a road that people in general drive way too aggressive on.
Yeah.
So just a little bit bad. It's not like it was this like straight, nice, easy to drive on highway. It's just like a horrible road. I always try to avoid it. So many people called 911 and honked their horns at Diane. Diane was said to be staring straight ahead while driving with intent, and the car was traveling at least 85 miles per hour, which is crazy fast for that road. The speed limit is 55. So even when I'm driving on it, like, I will go faster than that. But there's some spots where it's so twisty and narrow where you really just, like, can't go that fast. One witness said it was like playing chicken. I mean, she was going straight on the road. We saw something coming at us. We reacted. We moved. She had no reaction at all. She didn't stop. She didn't slow down. She didn't move. I thought it was somebody dead set on killing themselves. It would also be a road in a lot of parts where it would be hard to get out of the way quickly enough because of how narrow it can be in parts. And there's a lot of hills. So even if there's like a hill there, you may not necessarily see someone coming at you from the wrong way right away.
I just think it's so scary, the idea of wrong way driving. Like, you just can literally do nothing about it. If somebody's coming at you that fast, what can you do? It's terrifying.
Yeah, especially on a road like this, it's really scary. At 1:35 p.m., Diane crashed the minivan head-on into an SUV that was carrying three men. There was Guy and Michael Bastardi. Guy was 49 and Michael was 81, and their friend Daniel Luongo, who was 74. The men had been on their way to a family party. The three men, Diane, her daughter, and two of her nieces died at the scene. Brian and the one niece were severely injured. Another female child would later die in the hospital. Two other people in the third car also sustained injuries as well.
So the three nieces died, her daughter died, Diane died, and the three men in the car. The only one, I think there were some other cars where people were injured, but out of kind of Diane's group, the only one to survive was Brian. Bypassers started to call 911. There's a bunch of clips online. We might put a few in here. I'll just read out one of them. It says, there's an accident, Route 17, 117, what is this, Pleasantville Road? And the person says, like, so anyway, they're kind of panicking. They said, I'm not from around here. What's going on? And they said, there's been an accident. And the 911 operator asks, are there any injuries? The person says, I really don't know. Hold on, let me check it out. Honestly, I don't know. There are a bunch of little kids. The kids aren't moving. There's a bunch of kids. Honestly, the car is smashed. The car is missing pieces. It's really bad. The kids are bleeding. So there are, I guess, crime scene photos out there. There's photos of Diane. There's, like, it's horrible. It's carnage. Like, there's no other word to describe it.
Hey, police, 911.
Oh, my God, Dan. Oh, shit. Big accident. What road are we on?
What mile walk are you at?
What mile walk are we at? What road is this? Hey, hold on. Cut the road.
What? Hold on. Stop yelling.
Oh,
911.
Listen, I'm shooting New York City police officer.
Okay, are you out at the scene right now?
Yes, I'm at the scene.
Okay, are there any injuries?
No, we have fatalities.
Fatality at the scene?
Yeah, we have
okay, stay on the phone with me. I'm going to give you EMS, okay? Hold on.
Okay, that's okay. So there's an ambulance too. We have a possible car fire. Go up and blow up as well.
So there's a car fire and a fatality?
Yeah, there was numerous fatalities.
Numerous fatalities?
We
got
one.
This is at 4.1 northbound on the Taconic, 60 control.
I talked about before, one of Mike's good friends and my friend actually saw the aftermath of the accident, like right after it happened. He said that he saw like the fire. He said it was a huge fire and that he felt like he could smell like the bodies burning and stuff, that it was pretty traumatic to see.
Even the people who ran to help were so brave because, like, yeah, it would have been smoke, fire. They were so brave to run in and try and help the kids.
A lady was screaming in Spanish. There was kids in the car. So I went down the hill with this other fella, and we were trying to get the door open. The door wouldn't open. We couldn't get the sliding door. We were looking for the driver. We couldn't find her. The car was fully engulfed in the front.
We're the first ones there. And we just kind of circled the car, checking the doors. He checked the other side. I checked the driver's side. It was locked. I went around. And then ended up breaking the passenger side window to unlock the door.
We finally got the door open. guy that I was with, he opened the door, and her body fell on top of our legs.
She, like, rolled into the two of us that were standing there. And we literally had to step over her to reach in for the kids.
And then we were just concentrating on getting the kids out of the burning car. They were piled on top of each other. One of the fellas handed me the girl. I laid her down on the grass, put my head on her chest to hear her. I talked to her. I prayed to Jesus to help her wake up. So please make her wake up. She wouldn't wake up.
So two men who ran to assist at the scene said that they found a large broken Absolute vodka bottle in the driver's side of Diane's vehicle. Police did conduct autopsies and they found that Diane's blood alcohol content was 0.19 and that she had 0.19% and that she had 6 grams of alcohol in her stomach that had not been absorbed into her blood. So I guess that indicates it's fairly recently consumed alcohol. The legal driving limit in New York is 0.08%.
Someone on Patreon did say in maybe a book that someone wrote that they were able to tell that the alcohol in her stomach that hadn't been absorbed was the vodka.
I haven't seen that, but that would make sense.
Yeah.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
With new McValue at McDonald's, you get more than you expect. So after a long day, buy a double cheeseburger and add a McChicken for $1. Because saving with deals is always on the menu with new McValue.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The report also said that she had high levels of THC, which is the active ingredient in marijuana, and that she had smoked marijuana as recently as 15 minutes prior to the crash. The gas station attendant, so that's where she stopped and tried to buy the pain gel caps, would later tell the media, "I know for a fact she wasn't drunk when she came into the station. She was fine, but she did ask for Tylenol." So Daniel, her husband, has been very vocal about disagreeing with the findings of the investigation. They died at the end of July. In August, on August 8, he gave a press conference and said that Diane had not taken any illegal drugs and that she had not consumed any alcohol on the weekend because she was in care of 5 children. He would later change his story and deny that Diane ever drank to excess. He also told Larry King that the couple kept the old bottle of vodka in their camper and that Diane had packed for the trip, so she must have taken the bottle out of the camper and put it in the minivan or the truck that they were taking that weekend. He said they had drank alcohol on the camping weekend, but he denied that they had had anything to drink the morning of the accident. A PI who was hired by Daniel would later say, "Unless you believe the woman who's like PTA, mum of the year, decides this is a day I don't give a damn, I'm going to have 8 or 10 shots and smoke a joint in front of my kids or nieces, then something else had to happen." So family would later tell People magazine that Diane used to smoke marijuana occasionally to reduce insomnia. And her sister-in-law made a statement to police in November that year and said that Diane had smoked marijuana on a regular basis. So Daniel and his attorney, Barbara, put forward the theory that Diane may have been driving erratically due to a medical condition such as a stroke. Barbara also said that Diane suffered from diabetes, but other reports say that she only suffered from gestational diabetes, which only occurs during pregnancy. She wasn't pregnant. So basically, I feel like it is true that she had gestational diabetes. I don't think from everything I've read that she actually suffered from type 1 or type 2 diabetes. Daniel also suggested that Diane may have had a mouth or tooth abscess for 7 weeks prior to the crash. She also had her lump in her leg, and Daniel, quote, said it may have been an embolism, which is just so weird to me.
Like, literally just throwing it all out there.
Anything to do with the brain and, like, something that would cause a very sudden medical event. Like, if you think you have an embolism in your leg, you should be going to get it checked.
You should, like, get that taken care of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So despite him being adamant about all these possible conditions, the autopsy showed that she had no signs of a stroke, aneurysm, or heart attack. Daniel also announced that he wanted to have Diane's remains exhumed to perform hair tests. He kind of argued that there wasn't enough testing done. He wanted to get her remains exhumed. In July 2010, it was said that he had accepted a $100,000 offer from a film company to record the exhumation for an HBO documentary. The money was meant to be placed in a trust for Brian, even though this is now 14 years ago. As far as I can tell, she has never been exhumed. If she has, the results have never been made public. It wasn't included in the documentary, I believe. Like, but that was kind of all happening at around this time. He was adamant he wanted to get it retested. In 2010, the New York State Police issued its final report on the accident after almost a year of analysis. They upheld the previous toxicology findings that said that Diane was highly intoxicated and that she had high levels of THC in her system at the time of the accident. So Daniel basically kept denying that Diane would have ever been drunk or intoxicated or high when she was driving, and this really angered the family and friends of the victims, which is totally understandable. Daniel Longo's brother said, "I want Daniel Shuler to know that he keeps inflicting more pain on all concerned once again by going to the media to try to paint a picture of a perfect wife and mother." So in August 2010, which is just over a year after the accident, the crash was ruled as a homicide due to Diane's negligent driving. The Westchester County District Attorney, Janet DeFiore, said that no charges would be filed on the incident because Diane was the only person responsible for the deaths. She said Diane Shuler died in the crash and the charges died with her. So as is probably expected in a case like this, there was a lot of legal action going on. In December 2009, the year of the crash, the Bastardi family filed a suit against Diane and Warren Hantz. So Warren was her brother. They were seeking unspecified damages for wanton, willful, and reckless conduct. According to the family lawyers, they were required by state law to include Warren in the suit because he was the owner of the minivan that Diane had been driving. In July 2011, Jackie Hantz, who was the mother of the three nieces who died, filed a suit against Daniel. The suit claimed that the three girls suffered terror, fear of impending death, extreme horror, fright, and mental anguish. On July 26, 2011, which was the day after the premiere of the HBO documentary and on the second anniversary of the crash, Daniel, who is Diane's husband, sued the state for not keeping the roads safe. And he also sued his brother-in-law, Warren, as the owner of the minivan that Diane was driving, which is wild. Like, I guess, you know, that's part of it. He maybe had to sue him because he was the owner of the minivan. But just imagine your wife killing your three nieces and then taking out a lawsuit against their father. Wow.
Yeah, I guess it's because it's when you sue like that, you're suing like the insurance, really.
Yeah, and the estate, I guess, too. By July 2014, though, all lawsuits by all parties were either settled or dropped. So I feel like a lot of the outcomes haven't been made public. I'm assuming some of them got settlements, but we don't really know in terms of the financial outcome for most of them.
Mm-hmm.
In 2011, Jackie became pregnant with a miracle IVF baby daughter. She said that they planned to name the baby daughter Casey Rose in honor of her three big sisters. The name they came up with was a combination of their initials, K is for Katie, A is for Allison, S for sisters, E is for Emma, and Y is for you. In an interview with Ladies Home Journal that year, she spoke about the situation. And as a mother, I don't even know how you could lose all three children, how you could even... You know, I know you have to get on with it, but just the tragedy of that is unfathomable. But she said, "People always ask how I feel about Diane. You can't imagine how complex that question is. How does a person go from being like a sister to me, adored by my girls and cherished by my husband, to being the one who ruined our lives? How could this person I trusted completely have done something so unthinkable that I couldn't and still can't wrap my head around it?" So Jackie wrote a book in 2013 and it's called I'll See You Again. And it ends with this quote, which I just wanted to include because I find it quite interesting and very thoughtful. It says, I know better than anyone how little influence we have over the direction our lives take, whether you call it destiny or fate or the randomness of the universe. Some things happen for reasons we can't begin to understand. Trying to exert control over the events of our lives is ultimately a fool's game. All we can truly master is our own responses. So that is kind of it in terms of the chronological timeline of the case and the aftermath. There is a lot of discussion in this case. And a lot of theories as well about why what happened. One of the theories is that Diane was deliberately drunk and high and on a suicide mission. This may come back to her being under so much pressure or feeling like she was under so much pressure to be this perfect mother that she never had. Obviously, having five children at a time is very stressful. Like, I just wonder if this was the case, what caused her to snap. I did read some comments online, and now obviously this is quite an old case. A lot of the articles are broken, but some reports did indicate that the night before the crash, she received some type of mysterious phone call. So that may have triggered her. There was kind of some conversation that maybe her marriage was on the rocks. It's never ever been confirmed what this phone call was about, but people have speculated that maybe this led to her suicide mission. As we mentioned, she did buy the orange juice at the McDonald's. She was known to like to drink screwdrivers, which is a cocktail of vodka and orange juice. So maybe she added the vodka from the Absolut bottle to the orange juice at that time. One other theory that I've read a lot about is that she maybe hadn't been drinking as much as she usually did over the weekend, and she was going through alcohol withdrawal. So she thought, God, I better have something to drink. So she put the vodka in the orange juice, drank way too much, way too fast, and that kind of caused everything to happen. So in terms of them, Diane and Daniel, maybe having marital issues, there is a New York Post article from 2009, and this is some quotes from it. It says, a friend of Diane said her marriage seemed a bit rocky and I think she felt trapped by it. And there's the same article, a quote from the same article that said Diane was a local at her regular bar, and the bartender said, I wouldn't say she was an alcoholic, but she liked her drinks. She liked her vodka. The other thing that people discuss, I guess, mainly based on Daniel's denial that Diane was an alcoholic or that she would have been drinking, is that she possibly had a syndrome called auto-brewery syndrome. This is a comment from our blog about it. I'll read it out because it's quite interesting. It says, there is a condition called auto-brewery syndrome that is rare but real. The patient's body produces an unusually high amount of yeast in the gut. Combined with the intake of carbs, large amounts of alcohol are actually brewed in the stomach. A person can become very drunk very suddenly without any consumption of alcohol. In addition, maybe the marijuana in her system was from the night before to help her sleep, which we know that's now probably not the case because they said she probably consumed it within 15 minutes, but I'm just reading the comment as it was. It says, it seems odd that she'll become so severely impaired, especially because no one would say that she appeared drunk. In addition, auto-brewery syndrome can cause severe bouts of vomiting, and she was seen on the side of the road in that condition. It seems to me if she was a closet alcoholic, she wouldn't be vomiting because she would be used to being drunk. A blood alcohol test for auto-brewery syndrome would have the exact same results as someone drinking large amounts of alcohol. Again, this is a very, very rare syndrome. I did find an article about this where a man got off a drink driving charge. It was in Belgium. It says he has a very rare metabolic condition that causes his body to produce alcohol. And basically they estimate that under 20 people in the world have this condition. So I feel like it's so unlikely.
Yeah, it's a stretch.
That this happened to Diane. So as we mentioned, like, I personally feel she probably was an alcoholic and something did cause her to snap. It seems like, as we mentioned, there's no stroke, there's no aneurysm, there's no medical reason, according to the experts, that she acted like this. I feel like she just snapped that morning for some reason, and she drank, she smoked marijuana, maybe to be able to go through what she did. That's my personal thought on this, on the situation.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like, considering her personality type, like I mentioned before, that she was very type A, like to have everything her way, was probably wanting to control a lot of things. So I wonder if just with probably a crazy weekend with a lot of kids, packing everything up to go was probably kind of annoying and frustrating. The kids, maybe they were a little annoying in the car. There was traffic, they said. It seemed like she did have some road rage before the incident where she was driving aggressively. It was beeping. Like I said, driving on Taconic is really annoying and a stressful road to drive on. So I wonder if she was just feeling overstimulated and very like grr, like rageful. Seems like she was maybe having some type of pain. I don't know about this tooth abscess that she allegedly had for 7 fucking weeks, or if she just maybe had a headache, something like that. Couldn't get any medication. That probably further annoyed her. And then wanting to take the edge off, maybe she did have some vodka in her car, did have marijuana on her, clearly. May thought she would just take a hit of the weed and she'd be fine to drive still, and maybe that would relax her a little. Maybe it didn't work fast enough. So then maybe she was like, oh, let me just have a little vodka. Because it seems like she clearly had the vodka
very accessible.
Well, I mean, like she had it not that long before the crash because it was still just like in her stomach. It wasn't even absorbed or anything yet.
Yeah.
I just think all of the evidence makes it seem like, yeah, she did drink and smoke weed. And maybe just like the stress of being such like a type A person maybe made her kind of snap in a way. But I don't think that it was the auto brewery thing.
No.
I think her husband like does seem, I would say, annoying, but I try to have empathy where I could understand maybe,
I guess,
wanting to defend your loved one.
And also you have to remember too that Brian had her son is still alive. So you don't want to be out there being like, yep, she was an alcoholic. She did the wrong thing. And also
garbage.
For legal reasons, you wouldn't be doing that either. Like I guess
that's true too.
It's in his best interest to try and find another reason for her doing why she did. But I just feel like it's unreasonable and there's absolutely no evidence.
He's carried on about it for a long time.
Yeah.
Like it's gotten to the point where it's like, shut up about it already.
Yeah. I did, copy this comment from Reddit, and it goes along the lines of what you've been saying. I found it was quite interesting. It says, one final point, Diane was one of those perfect people, driven, successful in her career, energetic, hyper organized, cheerful, and likable. In fact, she seems so perfect to me that it suggests she was putting up a front. This is not uncommon. Sometimes people who seem to have everything going for them on the outside are the most miserable inside. This personality type fits a certain type of suicide. This type of person feels compelled to create the perfect facade to stave off the panic within. That Diane never seemed to share with anyone her deepest feelings, and that she never reconciled with her mother suggests that she may have had a real dark side. So obviously it's just a Reddit comment, yeah. But I feel like a lot of that makes a lot of sense. I do think she bought the orange juice at the McDonald's to mix with the vodka. Makes sense to me based on her preferences for what she liked to drink. She had the vodka in the car, in the driver's seat. It wasn't like it was packed in the trunk of the car. She had it there ready to go. I just feel like something must have happened and she just had enough. And you know what? This happens every single day. It happens in murder-suicides where mothers kill children or fathers kill children. Just one thing can be enough to push someone over the edge, whereas on another day it might not have been. But that day something happened, or the night before something happened, and she had just had enough, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say too, then I forgot, but I bet she did drink more than people thought she did, because people like that are generally better at hiding it, kind of, not to say like she was a functioning alcoholic, but, you know, just like, oh, just a little, like a glass of wine every night to take the edge off and stuff like that. So again, I don't think her husband's like a bad person for wanting to defend her, but at some point it's like, read the room, like you're just hurting the rest of the family who have been hurt enough by this.
Yeah.
It's time to just like be quiet about it and stop being like, I need to prove that she didn't do this on purpose, or that she didn't, that she wasn't negligent, that something happened to her. Like, just, we need to move on. Like, she messed up clearly, I think. And that's that.
The other thing I found kind of interesting too is that she went to the gas station and she asked for gel cap pain relievers. Like if your tooth abscess was that bad, or if you were in like, maybe she just had like, maybe that does go along with the alcohol withdrawals and she just felt really shitty. But if you were in pain, wouldn't you just take whatever they had? Like, I don't know, maybe she had an issue with taking tablets. There could be reasons for it. But I just feel like it's interesting that she only wanted the gel caps and then she didn't buy them when they didn't have it. So that indicates to me, A, there was not that much pain. Or, I don't know, it just seems like a weird, maybe she went in looking for something else.
Yeah, true, because they definitely would have had, like, some type of ibuprofen, I would imagine. I've never been to, like, a gas station where they didn't.
I just found it interesting because they've always been very specific that she requested gel caps, and she was told they didn't have them, so she didn't buy anything. So I just found that kind of an interesting point, too. We did ask on Instagram what people thought about this. I'll just read out some of the comments. It says, I think she was a functional alcoholic until she went too far on the drinking of the day on the crash. I think she was drunk or high and went into some sort of psychosis. May have had a rough day, relapse from years of not drinking, couldn't handle the amount. Some people have said drugs, but the only drugs I believe that were found in her system were was the marijuana. So I don't really think it was probably any other drugs. Someone said, I think someone possibly something was put in her drink before she left, which is interesting. Or she had a medical problem, alcohol-induced psychosis, closet drunk who thought she was okay, probably drove drunk all the time.
Mm.
So most of the thoughts go along. And then the other, someone else said, I think she may have struggled with her mental health, may have been bipolar. Again, could have been.
Mm.
And that she was just under so much pressure, or put herself under so much pressure to be this perfect mother, career woman, doing it all, and one day just couldn't do it.
Yeah. I don't see how someone would think like something got put in her drink, like where at McDonald's.
Yeah, yeah. And after hours, like everyone said that at the McDonald's she was fine. Yeah. I also don't think someone put something in her drink. If someone did, it was her putting vodka in a drink, I would think.
And if you get an orange juice from McDonald's to go, I'm pretty sure it's usually a bottle. Like it's not. Oh no, it might be a fountain.
Here they.
But whatever. I still don't see why someone would do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of just like the simplest explanation is probably what happened. There's literally vodka in her car, and they found the vodka in her stomach.
I just feel like it's interesting.
Trying to save face, like you said.
The only reason that it's even really a discussion, like any other case where someone was found to have such a high blood alcohol level and THC levels, be like, okay, well, it's a, you know, driving under the influence crash, that's why. But it's just because the husband has been, nope, definitely not, that this has gone on for so many years.
Yeah. And I mean, to be fair, he might not have known how much she drank in it.
Yep.
She might not have drank a lot. She could have just made, honestly, a dumb decision in the moment. And to him, it probably does seem out of character, I'd imagine. I always, like, randomly look to see if the son has ever spoken about it. I doubt he will, but. Or if he even remembers anything.
So I think he was 5, I think we said at the time. So now he'd be probably nearly 20. Is that my maths are right? But yeah. I have never seen him speak, and I am assuming he probably never will. I would understand that.
Yeah, just like personally, I just wonder if he remembers anything, what he remembers.
Yeah.
Or if he really doesn't, because he also got a brain injury after that too.
Yeah, so he would be 20 now, 20-ish. He was 5 at the time. It's been 15 years, so.
So that's really it for this episode. Definitely be interested to hear what you guys think, unless it's auto brewery syndrome, then I don't want to hear it.
I don't want to harp on about it, but fair enough if it was more common, but 20 people in the whole world have been diagnosed with this. I feel like there's no way she had that.
Yeah, and like there's literally alcohol in her car.
Yeah.
But yeah, would be interested to hear what other people think about this one, so let us know either in the Spotify comments or on Instagram. So everything will be on the blog at truecrimesocietyblog.com if you want to read more about it. And again, for those interested, the documentary is There's Something Wrong with Aunt Diane on HBO. Make sure you're following us on Instagram. That's where we're always posting the latest crime stories and all that if you want to stay up to date with everything and if you want to see what we're up to. You can follow us on our personal accounts. Mine is StephSum_, Olivia's TCS Olivia. And check us out on Patreon if you would like some more content. We have weekly bonus episodes. So you'd be getting 2 episodes a week, the regular episode and a bonus episode. All of them are ad-free. And we do early releases on the regular main episodes. So you get them the day before they normally come out. If you subscribe, you get access to all the back catalog of all the bonus episodes too. So that is cool. If you're going on a long trip or something, or if you're bored and you want a bunch of episodes to listen to, there you go. Thank you guys for listening. We love you guys. Stay safe out there. Peace out.
See ya.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.